episode 29, Underground Espionage. Tara, how is it going?
It's great. You know, it's hard to form words after watching Messiah of Evil because it takes you to such a, you know, silent place full of visions and madness that yes. it's difficult to articulate thoughts afterwards.
It's a good thing we're doing a podcast about it.
You know, it's a really good thing we're doing a podcast. You know, I think the narrator says it best at the end when she says that each of us are dying slowly in the prison of our minds. And isn't that true for all
it's
of us?
It's certainly
just dying slowly.
True. I feel like it's been true
in the prison of our
all
minds.
Summer. I'm feeling it, but we're getting through. It's been in our world, been a whirlwind, a roller coaster. I gotta say, T, right off the bat, there's a good chance I'm turning this AC on during this.
I was wondering, you are broilingly hot.
This is brutal.
Maybe I should,
so
it might happen at
some
point.
It's a good chance I'm gonna turn on the AC.
You know, sometimes we have named it, we were on tour. And sometimes in our lives, I'm sure all of you wonderful people, thank you for being here with us, have experienced this, where you're just kind of in a period of high strangeness.
Yeah.
Like the things you expect to happen aren't happening normally, and people are behaving erratically, and you'll have something amazing happen and then something awful happen. Like you never know quite what to expect. And it's not a bad time. It's just a surprising, you know?
Yeah, but bad can be a part of it.
But our base, bad is a part of it, but great is a part of it. It's like the best things happen and the worst things happen sometimes. But but the point is, our bassist coined it the chaos vortex. And she says that Mike and I enter chaos vortexes frequently. And I think we are in a chaos vortex
There's
right now, Mike.
There's no question we are. It has been a strange week.
Pulsating of time where a day will feel like it's 5 days long, and then you blink and it's over. It's just like, who even knows what's going to happen?
We'll go ahead and say the real low point will be, and it will affect the podcast for a minute or two because you won't be able to talk.
That's true.
Will be that Tara did find out she's going to be getting some major dental surgery.
Yeah, I'm going to need some bone. I didn't ask where the bone's coming from. It's going to be cadaver bone. It's a big,
yeah.
It's like, it's not like having a little tooth taken out or something. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
We don't need to detail it
we're going to detail it when we know what it is, and so we don't and that's going
to
happen.
But I won't be able to speak, and I won't be able to have teeth in one portion of my mouth for about 4 weeks.
We'll see. Yeah, so
I'll figure something
that's
out.
That's going to happen when we get home from New York from the Hospital Fest. So again,
yeah,
the Hospital Fest being one of the great things that's happening, you know, the full lineup as we talked about last week. Really excited today they just announced the FFH box set that includes what I consider to be the best thing I ever put out on Gods of Tundra would be the FFH 7-inch.
It is. It's an iconic 7-inch. Like, I picture it in my mind. You said it right now.
Yeah, so I'm excited that those tracks are going to be made available again on the box set, mm-hmm. as well as all the a ton of the out-of-print hospital stuff. So make sure when you go pick up your tickets for New York, go and pick up the box set. Very excited for that. So, like, that's good stuff that's happening.
Well, yeah, and then me negotiating with the oral surgeon, with the periodontist, and then saying, like, no, I need to be a new... Look, you can rip anything out of my mouth you want, but you can't do it today, and you can't do it until after October 12th. So, heads up.
October 11th.
11th is when the show... But I'm just saying,
I just want to be clear.
Yes, but, you know... But, exactly. So... You got to give me time. So, yes, the show's in the 11th. You can't rip anything out of my mouth or cut these bones open until that point. No drilling, no filling, none of that business until after that.
Yeah, so that happened, and then some good things happened, some good behind-the-scene things happened that we won't discuss right now until they come to fruition and come to life, but that all in the same day.
And as a listener of this podcast, if you enjoy what we've been talking about, the people that we have spoken with, then you will equally be excited.
It's been really cool. Do you want to shout out? I know we've gotten a bunch of new listeners in these past couple weeks, especially from Tim's interview, the Tim Ritter interview, and Debbie's interview, the response to that interview has just been overwhelming. Really excited to have new people on board. Welcome. And, you know, for any of the new people, this podcast stems not only from our other podcast, Noise Extra, but our Patreon series that was a part of Noise Extra. We decided to, in a way, reboot it. It became Underground yes. Espionage. But we did, there's about 250 or so episodes there. And so we covered so many different movies and different things over there that we knew that at some point we were going to start redoing those. And today is going to be that day. We definitely talked about Messiah Evil mm-hmm. on Home Time, but I think giving it another talk today
but
and giving
it a restart. Because, peripherally.
True, but we yeah. just have, I know we have, there's a lot of people who weren't subscribers or new people coming on board. So at this point, everything's fair game. If we talked about it, yeah. 6 years ago, we're going to talk about it again.
Hey, I'm just throwing that out there. Remember that? Like, we're the ones who talked about it, and I can barely remember it. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Well, that is true, and it is pretty funny because I do find that I'll forget things we talked about.
Yes,
and like when I was talking to the Hysteria Continue guys, you know, they'll forget movies they talked about. Yes. But as a listener, I remember. So it is
a
strange
thing,
right? No, that's
true. Your brain does work
but I
that
think,
way.
But I
well,
think,
mine does too, I guess.
I know. Yeah. I think there's something, when you're a listener, you yeah. remember things in a different way than when you
Because you're trying to
it.
Catalog what other people are saying, but you don't necessarily catalog what you say yourself.
Exactly. But welcome on board to any new people. We got some really cool interviews getting lined up as we speak. So possibly next week's episode will be an interview. We'll see. But like I said, October might be a little hit or miss as far as since we're going to be in New York and then with the surgery. So we'll see what we're going to do with the episodes in October. We will do episodes in October, but it may be we may miss a few weeks in October.
Well, and the crazy thing is, like, you know, I was talking to my parents and telling them about the dental surgery, and I was like, yeah, I was excited about my Halloween costume, and it's a stupid thing for an adult to say. I'm really sorry. God damn it, I hate it. It came out of my mouth, and I'm just full of dread.
But
I just started sweating.
You shouldn't be, because you should not
I'm
be.
I'm very excited about my Halloween costume.
Listen, your costume last year was incredible.
I loved my costume.
You were Dorothy Valance last year.
It was great. I can dress, and it right now I could dress up like Dorothy Valance anytime I want
and
in life, and
your
that's necessary.
Costume, I mean, do you want to wait? Because I think you'll still wear it at some point. It might not be on actual,
well,
depending
yeah, but,
on what your
but
face.
But no,
looks
the
like.
Dentist actually scheduled the surgery based on my swelling going down for Halloween.
Yeah.
Not that I don't know how we'll feel about it, but now that I think about it, though, my mom was like, "Well, why didn't you just have that be your costume?" Because she said I'd look like I was punched in the face several times.
Well, I think I mean,
so my costume might be just like some black eyes and a big swollen face,
an abused wife, basically.
An abused,
yeah.
I could be a different
I'll
Dorothy
be the
Valance.
Abuser.
Oh my god,
oh, yeah,
I can wear my Dorothy Valance
after
wig.
She's beaten up.
I can just stand out in front of our apartment nude and be like, yeah. "He put his disease."
There you
in
go,
me.
And I'll just yeah, yeah perfect.
That
okay,
is
so
great.
No matter what, we're good.
It's like lawn decoration yeah. mixed with costume.
But you're also kind of yeah. Lady in the Radiator with those puffed out cheeks, depending.
Oh, my God. But I don't think it's going to be two cheeks. I think it's going to be one side of my face.
Well, we'll see. So we'll keep you all updated on what's going on in our life. But, you know, anyone who's known us for a while knows that these sort of things are just part of life. And I know, you know, yeah. we have talked about the Chaos Vortex with people, and we are definitely in it right now. Like I said, it's a roller coaster, so there are highs and lows, and there's other lows yep. of just mundane life stuff that's been going on yep. that's not, we don't need to talk about, but it's definitely been a very strange, really, honestly, August, I would say really August has kicked off in a very strange,
summer.
So it's just been a strange
since
summer.
Since July 21st, yeah.
But
yeah,
this yeah. week has been exceptionally odd in our lives.
Well, and then that's why I wanted to get a treat. That's why
exactly.
I got a wine from the year that we moved to California. I really have been enjoying wines from a more innocent time. I like the 2019 vintages. So this is Priore de Blagnan.
Well, okay, so wait, no, so slow down. So let's introduce this one, because I'm having a glass of you and really enjoying it.
Well, I don't know a terrible amount about
well,
it, so
well,
we
yeah,
don't have to.
But the way you started saying that, like as a smooth brain like myself, I was already lost in the words you were saying. So
okay.
can you slowly say what
Chateau
it is?
Chateau means house.
Well, yeah.
Priore, it means Priory, if we're going to say it like the UK does. Because we've been watching those terror. Thriller.
Thriller,
sorry.
Amazing vibe, by the way.
If you need like a nighttime vibe, maybe like us and you've watched all the Hitchcocks, or you want something a little longer, the Thriller, that UK series, it's from the late 60s, early 70s.
70s, yeah.
And it's really like quite a serious mood. They're all like very intense and full of anticipation. Like I love, actually, yeah, a mood that would be appreciated.
I was gonna
in
say,
Messiah of Evil goes right hand in hand, right?
With this mood, great at the end of the night, great for as we're, yeah, you know, in the Halloween season, sets the tone for us at the end of the night. Yeah. So yeah, Thriller has been amazing. So
and a Priory, the Blagnan, and it's Médoc, which is a region in Bordeaux region. Mike, Bordeaux is not a grape. Bordeaux is a place.
In France.
A region, a wine growing region.
There.
Médoc is part of the Bordeaux region, and this is Cabernet mixed with Merlot.
I've been to Bordeaux,
mm-hmm,
and I will say I'll tell a funny, I played in Bordeaux, played a fest, and it was one where, so sometimes when you're making noise, when you're in our world, someone who may not be as familiar with noise might think like, oh, are you, you know, oh, it must be fun to like piss people off or something when you do your sets. And when you're young, okay,
yeah,
when we first started doing shows, like at a bar or something.
Sure, maybe that's a part of it.
There would be something enjoyable where you like, where it's like, oh man, everyone hated it. Wasn't that great?
Sure, you were banned from the establishment where I worked.
Exactly.
After playing a noise
show. But there's... there comes a point where that, I mean, that's quickly gets old. That's because it is not, I'm not a troll. It's not why we are into noise. That's in no way is that it. We truly believe it's the greatest form of art. But played a fest in Bordeaux and walked out on stage. There it was like the smaller room of a set of a fest, you know. I think like Flaming Lips were headlining, so you know,
Mogwai, like a fest, yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was like, but there were multiple stages, yes, right? One of those early 2000s, you know, packed room, you know, but probably 300 people. You know what I mean? It was like smaller room. End of the set, about five people, and I'm not exaggerating.
You cleared it.
We cleared the room, and I gotta say, it was one of those points of like, that didn't feel great.
No.
Like, there is that moment of like, when maybe at a certain time,
where
like,
are these chumps? Are they from that area? Aw, yeah, that's rude.
Definitely, France is weird because I've played a lot of shows in France, mm-hmm, and you know, there's maybe a thought, oh, France, they like avant-garde, blah, blah, blah. It's like, sort of. And there is, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, there is that, definitely.
But there's that, also, like, that element of, like, artistry and history and why should I be looking at this type of thing.
It can go both ways. I've had really great shows. I mean, really crazy shows, especially.
The show in Po, in southern France, in the Pyrenees. That
was really
amazing.
Cool. Paris, the squat we used to play, the name escapes me, but had some awesome shows there. But then some of the shows a little outside. And again, it was cool. I liked playing places like Metz.
Mm-hmm.
And like these sort of out of the way places,
yeah,
because I really love the drives and driving through the small little farm villages,
the Dr. Seuss trees.
Yeah, but it definitely would be hit or miss as far as like the reception. Mm-hmm. Which again, whatever, that's whatever. But when you said,
but also like the noise is kind of like maybe it is having a chaos vortex and inviting people into a chaos vortex where you all kind of make a whirlwind together. Like the energy of everybody like feeding into it is what makes everything work. So if people are unwilling and unreceptive, it's
not
definitely the same
thing. I mean, like the vortex, like something like when Yellow Gas Flames played in Nashville, you know, that was like really exciting and it really felt like the entire room was a part of it. Japan, same thing.
Yeah.
You know, so when it that happens, it's exciting, you know, and I'm really excited for New York because I think this is a really, you know, I think as we talked about last week, you know, real different side of things than Japan was in a way. And it's really highlighted today. We made a playlist, a track from everyone who's playing, and stay tuned to another podcast where we'll be discussing that in depth here shortly.
Yeah, wink, you want to hear us talk about it? Wink, wink,
wink. maybe a podcast that hasn't put out an episode for a little bit. Yes. Wink, 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 wink. But it was really cool today listening to that playlist because it really set, it really got us excited. You look at a flyer, you see the logos and you get excited. But then when you just lay it out in like a play, like one track from each band, and you're like, oh man, like what a cool, this is going to be really fucking cool. Like,
yeah,
it got us,
even
it got us even more
was exciting.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
To put it in perspective, we woke up way earlier than we wanted this morning because somebody was jackhammering outside of
true.
Our window, somehow fell asleep, turned off the alarm, woke up, watched Messiah, made a playlist.
Made a playlist for the hospital.
Listened
fest.
To the playlist. Yes. Then watch Messiah of Evil, yes. And then we hit record. So that's been the morning.
Yeah, that, yeah, the playlist, and then
right and now at, we're having a lovely
right after we finish the playlist, we put on the Flaming Ouroboros EP, The Tear, which is like, we've seen Flaming Ouroboros, and now I'm getting even. They're moving up to like what I, because that EP is so great.
It's awesome.
They're moving up to be the most excited. A friend was asking me who are we most excited to see, and it's basically like, well, everybody.
Yeah, it changes daily.
Yeah, it changes daily. Obviously, like we said last week, you know, we haven't seen Kickback, haven't seen Frontier. So obviously those are up there. Alpha Mania, Precot. But look, I'm just excited for everything. So yes, that has been our day. It's been jackhammer.
Sleep.
Accidentally fall back or kind of accidentally, kind of like, dude, I don't think I
didn't
I can
know
do it.
That I did. Yeah, but at some point I turned the alarm up.
Fell into
look,
a very strange dream.
Had some strange dreams. Actually, some of my dreams related to some of the relationships in this film.
Woke up, Hospital Fest playlist, Flaming Ouroboros, Messiah of Evil, cracked this bottle of wine. Now we're talking to you. This is literally our day, and this will be going up for, you know,
promptly
tomorrow.
After.
So this it'll be up tomorrow morning. So
yeah.
So you are with us, Underground Espionage listeners. And again, this is, anyone new, this is what it's like here. You know, we got our interviews. We love talking about shot on video and really obscure underground movies. But hey, we also might talk about something like Valley of the Dolls, or we also might talk about a big movie and we're coming from the underground perspective. Or we might talk about something like Messiah of Evil, where it was certainly an obscure underground movie that has gotten its due more and more.
Yeah, because in my mind, it's a huge movie. And then I was like, maybe tonight's the night we watch Honeysuckle Rose.
That is a movie we've been talking about watching. We'll see.
I remember
we'll see.
It. Maybe we don't have time. I just remember it so much from my childhood. And it's just a movie about chicks wanting to bang Willie Nelson.
I like it. We do. I still have a bunch of stuff to do.
Oh, shit.
And then, as well as, shout out to anyone in the LA area. We'll be DJing at the Monty on Saturday night.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Gray.
Saturday night, us, Gray,
Pockets. Yeah. So
it's
it's their night. The night of Dirge is night.
Shit. Okay, you're right. We have to plan our set, and I have to pick an outfit.
Yeah. So look, you're with us here, but yeah, things are chaos vortex continues.
Work.
Chaos vortex continues.
So Messiah of Evil, known by many names.
Well, Messiah of Evil is, you know, so we saw Messiah of Evil early on in the Mike and Tara life and mentioned this on the Tim Ritter episode, but it was part of the four movie when they used to at Best Buy, Circuit City, they would have these cheapy horror movie sets. Sometimes they'd be up to 50 movies. Literally.
Yeah. Best thing to dig through.
Eight movies, but the one we had was four movies. I remember it's called Root of Evils. Some terrible generic cover that, you know, that like who knows who made it, just some bad
like pre-Photoshop
art.
Like, garbage. Yeah, it's great.
And it had Christmas Evil, so that was the first time we saw Christmas Evil. It had Deep Red, which we'd already seen, but it was the U.S. version, which we never even watched. It had House on the Edge of the Park, which we had not seen up to that point. And then it had Messiah of Evil. Now, like I said, we'd already seen Deep Red and House on the Edge of the Park, Messiah of Evil, and Christmas Evil have all, thank God, gotten Blu-ray releases, have been cleaned up because those...
It was dork.
The versions of the movies on the disc were so pitch black. This movie in particular was the most impossible to see print.
You didn't know what the paintings were. Like, you could kind of tell there were people. And, like,
even
watching it again today, like, well, we had to, again, it's daytime. So we had to, like, close the blinds. And it's still kind of dark. But the colors are just so remarkable. And to not know that the murals were just so eye-popping and you had that play on reds and blues and all of the other, like, clear, intentional, beautiful cinematography going on in this is just kind of wild.
Yeah, and it was one where you just knew it was amazing.
Yeah.
You but just hope you're just somebody like, fixes I can't it. Wait to someday. But it, but then, but for the longest time, it was still incredibly obscure. And honestly, I mean, I want to say it might be Arrow's done a relatively recent version. The version we watch is the Code Red Blu-ray, mm-hmm. you know, obviously.
The Watch Today, yes.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, Code Red, what a legendary label, RIP. But it was at that time where, you know, he'd put up the store for like an hour. And you'd try to get your order in.
You got to have that cart ready.
And then it'd be like sold out for like 3 weeks until like put it back up again, right? But it does still feel to me, it obviously it's gotten more due and people know more about it. Mm-hmm. But I feel like it hasn't, and well, actually, don't correct me if I'm wrong. I let me live in it.
Live
in the shadow. Yeah. I don't feel that it's gotten that level of like possession. I know that it's gotten more of its due, and it should. It truly
is a fantastic film.
But I guess
and famous directors.
Well,
famous screenwriters.
Yeah, of course. So we'll get into all of it. But if you haven't seen Messiah of Evil, again, I am not a watch out for spoilers guy. Or in general, once in a while, mm-hmm. I might say. Mostly,
if there's a big reveal or something that we think would spoil, we don't reference.
Mostly,
it.
I like to listen to a podcast about mm-hmm. a movie I haven't seen and then watch it. I don't really care about spoilers. So if you haven't seen it, I think you can listen to us discuss this and then watch it.
Well, this film is elliptical. It starts where it ends. So it spoils itself. So.
Yeah, I
and
just think.
In theory, Mike, we can't
I'm
spoil
just saying,
it.
I think.
You know what I mean?
Like, I think you can.
Arletty spoils it.
Exactly. I think our conversation here will. Or at least I hope it'll only add mm-hmm. to your first watch of the movie. If this is your first watch, if it's been a while, great time to rewatch. Tara, let's get into Messiah of Evil.
And I just said Arletty spoils it. And if you're like, what the hell, Arletty, what is that? Well, the main female character, Mariana, what's her name? Marietta Hill. Marietta Hill. Her character's name is Arletty. And of course, I had to find out why her name would be Arletty, because it's just so uncommon. And it is the female lead in the French 1945 film Les Enfants de Paradis, The Children of Paradise, which I love.
Great movie. But that'd be a fun one to do someday.
Okay, so here's the thing.
I don't know if fun is the right word.
And
sorry,
the model,
weird word
the woman, the tragic heroine opposite the other tragic lead. Her name is Arletty, the model's name. So that's what this is named after. But yes, I always suggest, Mike, that we watch that. But it's such a downer, and I'm going to weep during it. Like, I will just straight up weep several times during that film. So it's like it's hard to find
time.
Maybe
it.
That's a post-dental surgery weeping type of thing.
We'll get to it. You know what? I'll say a movie that was depending on our schedule this week. Like I said, there's been a lot of ups and downs that I would actually – would be an incredible back-to-back feature, and if the interview doesn't go down next mm-hmm. week, maybe it'll be for next week, is going to be Through the Looking Glass, which I am so excited to do, but it's one that I wanted to really take time to do, mm-hmm. and I actually wanted to make sure we watched it 2 to 3 times before we did an episode on it, and so we just didn't have time to do that this week, but if we don't have an interview
it's gonna take
next
a lot.
Week, that will be the movie we do next week, but it would actually fit really well with Messiah of Evil, one of the great, strange, incredible, mesmerizing, mind-blowing porn movies of the 70s, would fit with Messiah of Evil 100%.
I thought you were going to say High Plains Drifter because Marietta Hill was
amazing
in
movie.
As well.
Amazing movie.
We digress. So we open Messiah of Evil onto this man running frantically down a nighttime empty street. And most of this film takes place at night. And most of this film takes place in vacant streets. And, you know, coming on this opening scene, he's running down in corduroy and he runs to escape some unseen person following him, some potential, maybe a pack of wild dogs, something of that nature. And he enters a backyard pool scene. And it's lit in this way
that's incredible.
Just shows you what's about to unfold. It's our type of lighting. You got like a red spot on some palm trees. You have a blue spot on the background. It's the warm playing against the cool. You have a teenage girl wearing orange, which is just like popping out like against, you know, that background, using contrasting colors, and wordlessly as he falls on the ground and she seems to be sympathetic to this man, she slits his throat and we have the opening of the film.
This, I remember when we got the Blu-ray version of it, immediately we're like, this is what I always thought this movie was gonna look like.
Yes, because, you know, he's running down the street and you don't even see him. Like the running
my
down
memory
the street,
is just
you
like,
just hear the foot.
Yeah, it's basically,
you know,
my
you
memory
hear
of
the
that.
Feet pounding pavement and you don't even know what's happening. So this was like, holy shit, amazing. Isn't that like in the when we see the dungeon scene and
in Don't Open Till Christmas.
Don't Open Till Christmas. We were like, oh shit, they're in a London torture dungeon.
Because the only version
no
we had had of that was not it was similar to the Roots of Evil box, was like
some
you
random,
could barely see it, right? And even, but Christmas Evil especially too, because that's...
Yeah, I was going to say Christmas Evil.
That
was really
an incredible...
Bad.
When you get the Blu-ray and the colors and the look of that. Yeah.
But this, you're just like... This is going to be fantastic because they do all of these things wordlessly. And also you get that first taste of the fantastic soundtrack.
So good.
Like the, on who does the
I
soundtrack?
Wonder if someone,
Fillion Bishop. And I looked him up. He only did two other soundtracks and one's like The Arm of the Tarantula. And like, really, I couldn't find any other releases.
I wonder if this has ever been released as a soundtrack.
It's a perfect soundtrack. Yeah. It's so, so good. And it really, you have a lot of, I keep saying the word vacancy in my head.
Okay.
I think of because of the hotel, but like it's very, there's a lot of space left in it. Like when you can hear really boring electronic music that does that, but this is very exciting electronic music that does that. And then you have your wonderful narrator who comes in, which is our Letty. Not far from here, there's a small town on the coast. It used to be called New Bethlehem. Now it's called Point Dune. They're waiting at the edge of the city. They're peering around buildings at night. And they'll take you. They'll take you one by one, and no one will hear you. I'm not going to do the whole, like, really good acting like that she does. And no one will hear you scream.
And the way she screams, this is a haunting scream.
No one will hear you scream.
And, yeah, Point Dune, a place we made a point to go out to. And when we go to the beach, we do go to Point Dune specifically because of this movie.
And it's Dune with an M, but they called this Point Dune.
Yeah, and so we specifically go there because of this movie.
Yeah.
And
so many other ones.
But also many, many other movies filmed, especially at this point where the rocks come out, and Planet of the Apes, when the Statue of Liberty is on the beach, this movie, a million others.
Well, you just, when you're there, because of the, it's like a tiny peninsula that's sticking out, so all the winds converge there, and you truly feel like you're on the edge of the world.
I'm sure
looking out
one
into
of the pictures for the post of this will be from there, one or two.
Oh, yeah, we should.
So
do
you
that.
Can
absolutely
see.
We can make that happen, Mike. You got to do it for the algorithm. You know what I'm saying?
Hey,
you got to do it for that gosh darned algorithm. So the thing that, again, even at this point, to remind yourself, this is a low budget film. It doesn't feel like that at all because the sets are so customized. The color is so amazing. Everything is just really, really well executed. So I guess I never, even in our younger years of first watching this, I was never like, this is an underground low budget film. I wonder why it didn't come out. It was kind of like one of those things where you're like, how did this really high budget film never get seen by that many people?
Yeah, no. And I think why it's so great is that because I do think that it comes from a place of, in a way, that thing that can only come from youth and not so much technical expertise. You're just
willingness
these ideas
to try
that
new
you
things.
Had.
Yes,
you watch this movie and this movie, and you know they loved Dracula and Frankenstein, and they loved, you know, some of the Euro art house stuff that was
whatever,
going on. So it's like it's that youthful combination of those things.
Or did they say Antonioni? I don't remember.
Yeah, I mean, all that kind of stuff. So it's that youthful combination of those things that can't really be redone because it's just, it's that thing.
Yes, you know? And it's Willard Hike and Gloria Katz's first film. So they are also known for Howard the Duck, Temple of Doom, and American Graffiti.
They helped write American Graffiti, and yes,
Temple. They were screenwriters.
Yes, Temple of Doom, of course, one of the all-time greats, one of the all-time great mainstream exploitation movies. That'll definitely be a movie that we discuss here on Underground Espionage, much like the Paul Verhoeven movies, mm-hmm. the what I call the mainstream exploitation. Temple of Doom is truly, it might even be the greatest. I mean, RoboCop.
Yeah, I mean,
Showgirls. I'm talking mainstream exploitation.
Mainstream, yeah.
It's you can't beat it.
I mean, the whole Indiana Jones series.
Well, obviously, we might just have to do. Well, the first three. We might just.
Yeah,
have to
I mean, yeah, the first three. Yeah. I mean, who's seen more than three?
Nobody. But yeah, so again, they're coming out of school. They're making this. They're young. So it's like it is that thing, you know. It's the early records from a band, you know, where it's mm-hmm. like. They weren't overthinking it. They just did it.
Screenwriters making films too. So yeah. They like got to execute their vision. And even down to like when we see so we have Arletty, we're setting the scene. We start out with a woman who is much like Cassandra. We've been, you know, doing the ancient Roman myths as we're falling asleep. She's doomed to see the future, yet none will heed her warnings. That is the same thing that's going on. She's in the insane asylum. These things have happened to her. She says the world will be these creatures, these undead, these people will be unleashed upon the world, but no one will listen to her and no one will hear you scream as they approach. So having all these things in mind, we have Arletty going to look for her father in this strange town, and she enters a gas station, and that's when we get that other first taste of what this town is like.
Yeah, this really incredibly creepy opening scene in the gas station, or sorry, opening scene with her in the gas station. And
starts with just a gas station attendant shooting out into the darkness.
Yeah, and you don't know what he's shooting at, and it's pitch black except for the lights of the mobile station.
Mm-hmm. And then... You know, she's going to fill up her car, and he's that classic, you know, warning, like, you don't want to go to Point Doom.
Yeah, like, why do you want to go there?
Don't go out to Point Doom.
What do you need to go there for?
You don't turn around now, lady. Yeah,
the doomsayer.
And the doomsayer is trying to give her a warning, and suddenly a very tall albino man appears, and he says, $2, no, what is it, top off? What's he say?
No knock.
No knock.
So, like, don't knock. Yeah, like, $2, period.
$2, no knock.
You know, like, two and a nickel, you know what I mean?
No, exactly. So, again, then we start to see this ominous man staring out into the darkness. Has, you know, kind of one crossed eye. Looks really like if you met this dude at night and he was behaving in this way,
yeah,
you'd be really creeped out, right?
Yes.
And so the warning is not heeded. We have this odd interchange. And it really encapsulates the thing I love about this film. And I think that anybody who has criticized it that I've seen, just really quickly, I don't ever want to hear people talking shit about this or other things that I love.
I don't want to hear anyone talking shit about Messiah of Evil, or do I want to hear anyone talking shit about
you? Or you lovely listeners or anybody.
If anyone talks shit about
an
underground espionage listener, I will fight them.
Exactly.
If anyone talks shit about Terra, I will fight them.
If anyone talks shit
about Messiah of Evil, I will fight them.
So... But the criticism is that the slow pacing and talking about slow leading into action. And I'm like, what the hell is on your brain? Like, what is not full of action on this? We have somebody's throat slit. We have running. We have an insane asylum. We have this creepy guy who's up to Lord knows what.
But I think because of that sentiment, it might be why this is still slightly under the radar. So you know what? Let's keep this one for us.
But I mean, it's part of the joy because like
I love the pace.
Because you're walking around in this vacated world where there are hardly any people and it's almost always nighttime and everything has this unbelievable aesthetic quality down to the storefronts to Arletty's father's home, and he's a painter, so you see these like vast murals, and it what's her name? Gloria Katz's roommate actually did most of the murals, her college roommate. So you have this like amazing house, and it's confusing as to where you are because they're just scenes of these people standing, like waiting for a bus stop, standing at the bottom of an escalator, just mundane scenes of allegedly normal people and these really, you know, contrasting primary colors. And depending on how it's lit, they look different, right? They're glowing. They're in the foreground. They're in the background. So they're such an active part of this film, but it gives you this slow, crawling, otherworldly, creepy feeling where you feel like anything could happen or nothing could happen.
Yes, I love the pace.
It's a chaos vortex.
It is. This movie is perfectly that. Yes. Now, have we discussed that that her father is an artist?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. And so when she reaches her, so she leaves the gas station and she goes to her father's home, which he has graced with a lot of amazing art. And it gets kind of like in that like painting a photograph style.
It's incredible.
And it's disorienting because the house, the set, it has this indoor-outdoor feel. So the paintings that are created are like the paintings of a boardwalk as you enter. So then you feel like you're outdoors and maybe there's some plants on the side. So it feels like a mural that would be outside, but then all of a sudden there's this swinging bed in the middle of the room, which is such a 70s thing, right?
Yeah.
Like just a giant, like king size bed,
like
suspended on chains,
yeah,
like right in the middle of the room.
Yeah.
And then our bedroom, like that's off to the side that our Letty's not using and she's letting the guest use,
yeah,
which would be like a giant, basically the room is a bed, almost like a,
yeah,
Hugh Hefner semicircle bed,
yeah, yeah,
where there's like clouds painted on the wall and palm trees and it's just like covered in various satin,
yeah,
blankets. Like it's very sleazy.
It's
classy sleazy.
Yeah, we could put that to good
is
use.
Is it classic sleazy?
It's, you know what, let's just say
we can put it to good use.
Yeah.
I'll make it work. You know, it's borderline trashy, which is what I love. you know what? And I kind of like, it's a, you know, it's
right,
like,
I think the listeners get it. I think they know what
we're
vibe is.
But what I'm saying is like the Peg Bundy aesthetic, like in the
and
show
Callie
and Callie Bundy, they're supposed to be trashy, but really
they're perfect.
It's what we all want. It's the best thing to look at. It's an absolute joy.
Two of the most perfect women.
And if you don't think Peg Bundy and Peggy Bundy are hot, like, I don't know you. I don't know who,
yeah,
you are. I've never met you because,
yeah,
I've never heard anybody complain.
No.
That's
all. You won't
all
hear me complain.
That's all I'm saying. It's really, really nice. So we have that feeling of entering an alternate universe, right?
The chaos vortex.
But I will say that being in Malibu is like that. Because it's,
yeah,
Malibu is so weird, but well, you have the coast and you have the rocks and it's very rugged, but you also have this place, like, I don't know if anybody listening has ever tried to stay in Malibu. You can't. Like, it's like the hotels are, or it's like
they don't really exist.
They don't really exist, and if they do, they're like $1,000 a night. You know, it's a crazy place, and there's not a lot of places to stay, and it's a lot of local people, and that kind of has that feeling here.
And even though it obviously has such a different reputation now, you know, for being like where just beyond ultra wealthy, mm-hmm, people live, back even when this movie was being filmed, it wasn't. It was like a drifter beach town.
Yes,
like it was, because it
100%.
Is like really far away. Like
it's
super far
anything
away to LAX. Like,
yeah,
it would be the biggest pain in the ass to get to LAX from there. It's not close to anything.
If we leave early, it takes us over an hour to get there.
So,
we're in the middle of Hollywood.
Yeah, so it's like it is obviously become something different.
Yes.
But back when this was made, it was, you know, drifter type town, and you get that sense from this movie, when especially when she's going into the town, you don't get this bougie,
no,
Hollywood actors live here type place.
You get this feeling of, what are you doing here?
Yeah, I mean,
it's
also
like,
kind of like Mildred Pierce, you know what,
yes,
I mean? So it's like it has that, mm-hmm, like dark. Again, when we talk about the ocean's darkness. You know, some,
yeah,
people say it's a place to go veg out. For us, it's a place to contemplate the dark abyss of infinity.
Yeah.
Like, it's not to me, the ocean is not quote unquote chill. The ocean,
yeah,
is incredibly powerful and incredibly dark. And this movie, watching it,
yeah,
now, this movie is a big reason why I feel that.
And it's unsafe. Like, you look, like, even having going, so we were watching this again, Mike, I was going to suggest, like, even when it's chillier, we should go walk around when it's cold.
Definitely, yeah, I'd be down for that.
But again, like, in this area, it does get cold because you're out on this little peninsula and the wind is frosty. Like, the water is freezing. It's not like the sweet little Atlantic Ocean, like warm breezes and that type of thing in the summer. It's cold. It's really cold.
Yeah.
It's really windy. So, but I think we should go. But like, looking out onto the waves at night, like when we went to Ventura and we go out on the long pier and you're just so, like, looking into the ocean and it's black. It's like inky
pure
waves.
Pure darkness.
And it's terrifying.
Absolutely.
Right? Like, just imagine what it's like being and on a boat alone at night. Like,
total inspiration.
That's a wrap.
Total dark inspiration, you know?
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, having that element, I think, is just so effective. And again, being able to see their shots of the night waves, like, yeah, we never could see those.
Yeah, exactly.
Before, when they were out on the beaches at night, lighting fires, staring up at the moon.
The blood red moon
up in this strange town where everybody's really evasive. Like, anyone you talk to is really evasive and they seem really resentful. And it also reminds me of my homeland of Kentucky, when you're in some place and people look at you like, why are you here? You know what I mean? Like, automatically you have this like feeling of like, I'm an outsider. These people don't trust me. They don't want to interact with me. And you get that feeling too of like that being an outsider.
Absolutely.
In this strange place.
Well, we're going to have a couple more outsiders. I'd say a trio of outsiders. Mm-hmm. We're going to meet here pretty
soon.
Well,
so then Arletty, our final girl. I don't know. It's such a strange. So Arletty goes into town looking for any signs of her father. She's in her father's home. She starts reading his journals, which I think are really amazing that they add the journals and they kind of unfold this quality of a man who is slowly losing his mind and is confused by his surroundings. And he's telling her shocking stories that she feels the need to go investigate where he is and what's going on in this town.
Yeah, right. So I wanted to point that the structure of the movie, then, you know, we get Arletty's voiceover in the beginning, but then the rest of the movie is her dad reading these journal entries that she's reading as the movie goes on, and it's going along with what's happening to her throughout the movie. So
it's a dual narration.
Exactly. So that's sort of the structure of the movie. So his journals, and it's things are progressively getting more fucked up, weirder, darker, and same thing that's happening to her as she's reading these journal entries.
Yeah, and he's starting to feel subhuman. He says he feels like his body is rejecting human blood. Like, it's just this amazing point where, again, some may say it's slow because, sure, nobody's, you know, being stabbed in the face and like you're not having some like violent zombie scene. However, the build is just so beautiful and it's confounding. And it's the thing that I like about it, it's mystical, right? It's
definitely,
it's that magical surrealism, and it done in a really provocative way, in an evocative way.
Absolutely.
So Arletty goes to the local art dealer, and we see again the classic characters in a mysterious horror film, and that would be, she goes to the local art dealer and it's a blind woman who's running the gallery, and it's a blind woman who has to have a male helper, and she communicates with him by like tapping in hand like Helen Keller. Like, it's insane, and it's just such an amazing and dumbfounding scene.
Yeah, so, you know, immediately we're already getting that, oh, these people do know who the dad is, but are being very evasive towards her.
And so that's where we get to meet. So she's going out, trying to find out what's going on, and ends up at a hotel. And I don't really remember right now what led her to the hotel, Mike.
They said that people came in asking about her
asking
dad.
Asking about
and
her
and
father.
They were staying
at the
hotel.
Staying
at the
hotel.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So as she walks into the hotel room where she meets, again, the other charming element to this film are just the characters inside of it, right? So we have the creepy albino guy. We have the doomsayer. We have just Arletty has Lana Del Rey. Like, Lana Del Rey should play her. If there's a remake, don't make a remake. I don't support them. But she has like big, big Lana vibes, big hair, gorgeous, lovely, stares off into the distance. And then we get these beautiful, like, sleazy couple that we encounter. Like, everybody is so likable, dynamic, and wonderful. But in the hotel room, in addition to this wonderful thruple, is is another doomsayer telling his tale. And what is the tale that he tells, Mike?
The blood red moon 100 years ago, the dark stranger who came.
So 100 years ago, the moon turned red. It was the night that everyone lost religion. They found out that men can do horrible things. The redder the moon got, the closer they were all pulled to hell. Until the night that everyone came down out of the canyon and the whole town changed.
Incredible. And he, the actor who plays the homeless drunk, as is he's referred to, he was in lots of noir movies. He's in The Big Sleep, I want to say. He's either that or Double Indemnity. He's in a bunch. He might even be in Maltese Falcon as well. But he's an old Hollywood actor. And so he was in a lot of stuff in the 40s and 50s. He's a lot of, maybe not the main part of the movie, right? But smaller
parts. Yeah, The Big
parts.
Sleep, House on Haunted Hill, Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, that's right. He's House on Haunted Hill. Yeah.
Maltese Falcon.
Nope, there you go.
So many. See,
boom,
you got
look at
it.
That.
There
did
you
that
go.
Off the top of my head, Tara.
Oh my, you sure did.
Didn't I?
Well, apparently he was also an Alf and Magnum PI. Big
good
fans of both
him.
Of those.
This
love
is a
them.
Great
guy.
Great guy. But yeah, so we do meet this traveling trio who, mysterious guy, two girls, one maybe more a mature, very sexy woman.
Just three sluts.
And then the younger one who is, we've often, since seeing this movie for the first time.
We have quoted this.
Misquoted it.
Misquoted this for years.
And then we watch the movie again, then we get the right quote, and then immediately go back to misquoting it.
Yeah, well, I mean, I like our misquote the best. You know,
she's kind of a brat. She's a younger brat.
Okay, so it's a man who, again, there's other lore surrounding his character, but he's a man whose mother's, he's from Portugal, and then his father's
from
the U.S.
He seems to be sort of a bullshitter.
But he's also seems like probably a wealthy Euro bullshitter who likes to collect beautiful women along the way. And he collects Anitra Ford, who's been in so many things. And
she's
then
smoking.
And Joy Bang. I mean, she's absolutely...
She's smoking.
Yeah. She's faultless. I mean, truly. Like, she's one of those people where you're just kind of, like, dumbfounded. I'm always, like, when I'm around people like that, I'm like, I feel like you're, like... descended from different people. Like, did aliens come down and breed with people to make like you? You know what I mean? Like, she's otherworldly gorgeous. And so, yeah, absolutely.
But what about the brat? So we were getting to the brats.
So getting to the brat, like the thing that we misquote her as saying is like, you know, later, you know, we always say this food tastes shitty. Like, that's what we quote her as.
I already forget the real quote.
I wrote it down. This food tastes shitty.
So
we're
eating,
anywhere, we don't like what we're eating,
like, this
or we're picking
food
at something.
Shitty.
This food tastes shitty. And she's really bratty about it, but she says, yuck, this stuff is shitty tasting.
That's it. But she's eating an artichoke, right?
Yeah. And then Anitra's like, you're not supposed to eat the fuzz. And it's kind of like,
I don't think I've ever
like
just eaten an artichoke.
I mean,
there's artichoke dip.
I find that
has anyone ever had anything but artichoke dip?
No, I mean, I've eaten artichokes. You have to like pull the little things off and you scrape it with your teeth and then throw the leaves out. There's not a payoff. Like, I feel like it's
this food
just
tastes
a,
shitty.
Well, I just, it's again, like, there's not a giant payoff for me in terms of it. Like, yeah, it's good, but it's a lot of work and I don't know if it's worth all the work. Again, I'll eat an artichoke dip. I would prefer an artichoke dip. But then again, I'm in it for the cheese. You know how I am. I want the dairy product involved. But you dip the artichoke leaves in butter. And now I feel guilty. Should I make us like stuffed artichokes? We could eat that.
We got a good dairy lined up. We're good.
Okay. Well, you know what? It's fine. That ship sailed. It's like a 70s thing to eat because it's a lot of work. Anyway. So, yes, Tom is our man, and apparently the suits that they bought him were very expensive, and they said they were the most expensive things that they had to acquire for the film, because even the cars they drove were, like, borrowed from other people. And Tom likes to wear vests. He wears three-piece suits. Not something you see that much anymore, Mike.
It's hard to pull off.
Hard to pull off a three-piece. I mean, Tom's very thin.
Yeah,
so I
that's
feel
part
like
of it. You gotta
a
be.
Well-tailored suit with a vest on a thin man. It's great. Go any, I mean, otherwise, you just... You know, you look like a cartoon otherwise. So, Anyway, they're all drawn into this mystery together because Tom is there investigating what's going on, trying to see what happened. I think he got a weird letter from the father that has gone missing. They all decide to solve the mystery together because guess what? The wino, as they like to say, the wino that they were interviewing on tape in their hotel room was mysteriously murdered after he discussed the mystery of the town and after he discussed it with them. They were kicked out of their hotel. No other hotel would have them. They needed a place to stay. So where did the three people go? Our Letty's house. And guess what? She has plenty of room.
Yeah, they're all staying in this strange, strange place. But the smoke show is kind of fed up with Tom's philandering, and he obviously wants to bang our girl. And
well, I mean, she's right. She's like, I'm sick of him trying to, you know, make moves on every broad ever.
Wants to leave.
He's a slut.
So she wants to leave the town, and this leads up to one of the scenes that when people talk about this movie will be the grocery scene and the movie theater scene. We're leading up to the grocery scene.
Yeah, the way the ladies get it in the end. Again, these two characters we do get, we're kind of glossing over all the wondrous things that go on between, like, all the dialogue. Again, what some people would say would be the slow portions of the film.
Oh, Terry, I'm not trying to. Yeah, no.
We watch them eat dinner. We watch the brat say, yuck, this food is shitty tasting. We watch her drinking, get her Cutty Sark taken away. And then she produces another bottle of Cutty Sark and starts drinking liquor straight from it. You know, when Laura gets so mad and is like, I'm going to leave. She's sitting in this crazy tiled, like, soaking bathtub that, like, you would only see in Japan.
It's so cool.
And, like, she's leaving. She's like, hey, Laura, will you leave me some grass? You know? It's like, you think you're going to have this, like, sensitive, like, scene between them. But instead, it's like, leave me some grass. Like, the whole thing is just, like, fantastic. It's her just being like, I'm bored. You know, just the waiting around. But the waiting around is also, like, you're filled with tension because you're waiting around while these people are going to ultimately meet their doom. Because you know, as we're reading more journal entries, as we're seeing more people displaying strange behavior, such as bleeding from their eyes, which is like one of my favorite tropes. Like, I love the bleeding from the eyes.
When you become this undead type
when you've
being,
been under the blood moon too long,
it's signified by your eyes bleeding.
And your ears bleeding.
Yeah.
And you don't feel pain. And we're reading all about it in the journal, and you're just like, you know, they are waiting around, but we know the more they wait around, the less alive they're becoming, right? So we have that tension. So Laura decides to ditch it. She starts hitching a ride in this fantastic skirt. She's so gorgeous. Just, you know, the albino guy pulls over and is like, you want to ride? And she was like, sure, why not?
In the back, though, we have a bunch of people comatose staring up at the night sky.
They had just been out for the fires. And yes, staring at the moon, staring into the fires. They're driving back. She jumps out of the car, runs to town, sees no one in town. And that's when we get this, like, absolute, it's so satisfying. I wanted to pause every scene. We see these, like, dazzling storefronts, you know, that had windows that had been hand-painted. And it's like
the way towns used to actually be.
Like, unique-looking, like, washer-dryer, $188. Yeah.
Clothing
storefronts,
camera stores, storefronts.
Storefronts that were decorated. I remember on my first, like, I guess it was my first job, but when I worked at the cheese shop in Kentucky, we had a storefront window, and like I was so excited when I got to decorate the window because I had like a budget and I could like put themes up and make a decorated window so when people walk by they could see like a cool beach scene or a cool Christmas thing, like all of this in the city. And then like, what a fucking joy. Like, where do you run when you feel unsafe? You run to the grocery store, you go into Ralph's. What could happen to you in a Ralph's? It's well lit.
Well, we're going to find out. And I love how well lit it is. What makes it even creepier is that it isn't a dark scene. It's actually an incredibly brightly lit scene, possibly the most brightly lit scene in the entire movie.
And she's so unnerved and she's losing her mind and she can't see anybody in town. She sees one woman and the woman, she's like, hey. She's trying to like flag this person down to figure out what the hell is happening in this town. Follows her into a Ralph's. And the horror that happens is that she finds out where all the townspeople are.
And they're eating raw meat in the grocery store. They're looking up at her. And then
right out of the reach-in bunker, incredible. Just grabbing out the meat, eating the meat with their red-rimmed eyes and blood coming out of their ears. And they look like totally normal townspeople other than the fact that they are devouring meat. And then, of course, we have to have a great grocery store scene chase where we see all the food of the era. Early 1971 amazing. Grocery store.
Amazing.
Mwah. So perfect.
They do go from eating the raw meat to eating.
More raw meat.
That's right. The raw meat that I would gladly dig my teeth into.
I don't want to eat a person.
I do. I want to eat you. It's been documented here many times. I want to eat you.
Yep.
100%.
Yeah, when I croak and they can't find the body. You all know where I went.
In my belly.
Are you going to save my bones, though?
Yeah. I mean, I could, obviously, I mean, I couldn't do anything.
Like, I mean, it's hard to eat, like, connective tissue. So, like, your hands, the palms of my hands, the soles of my feet, those will be hard to eat. So maybe you save those. Maybe drop them in a jar or something.
I'll figure something out.
I mean, who knows if I'll have any teeth that you can save or anything
like
that.
Maybe just see what happens in October.
Yeah, well, I'm getting extra bone, so you can chew on my extra bone that's going to be my own bone and the cadaver's bones. What if I get possessed by whoever's bones they were before, and I turn into a crazy person? Maybe if it was a really cool person, and I become a better, cooler person.
Well, we'll have to make the first underground espionage movie about it.
That sounds fantastic. We shall do it. So, we have this iconic scene. It's fantastic. Then we cut back to the house where Tony is bored, and she is wearing white panties. Every time I see it, I'm like, do people wear white panties?
I can't imagine.
Like wearing white panties is like a fetish now. Like, if you buy white panties to wear them, it's because you have like a thing.
I just feel like it's gone the way of, you know, storefronts in small towns.
I don't even want to get them.
No.
Like, just white cotton panties. I kind of want to get some just for fun. Maybe.
Hey.
I don't know. Maybe it's a thing.
Hey, maybe we can can make that happen.
It seems like a big responsibility, though. I'm just saying. So here we go. You know, Tony's bored, so they suggest she goes to a movie. So she goes to Kiss Tomorrow Goodbye. And again,
this is, you know, probably if you've heard of this movie, if you've seen it a long time ago, it's most likely this scene is what you remember. Obviously very inspired by The Birds, because it has that feeling of dread and then the feeling of she's in this completely empty theater. And
she buys a ticket. Yeah. She immediately. Oh, and the person who sells her the ticket is Gloria Katz. And she goes into the theater immediately. They put
up the clothesline. Of course, having Kiss Tomorrow Goodbye and the marquee, of course, just, you know, obviously very, very not very subtle, but incredible.
But it's great. Right? But the marquee is fantastic. It's pink. It's lit. It's bright. It's amazing. You go in like red satin, red velvet theater seats.
She's eating the popcorn.
But the red velvet. Okay, so you have the bright. The deep blood red. Then you have her wearing a white shirt lit with a spot that's like yellowish. And then as the townspeople filter in, they're hit with a blue light. So you have that contrast of the cool blue, because cool recedes and warm goes closer. Is that how it is? Blue shift, red shift, something like that. Anyway, so I think warm goes closer, blue recedes. So you have the blue in the background. Popping out against that red, you have her lit with the yellow spot as people come in, and suddenly the theater is filled up and they're
sort
just
of
staring.
A little groups, and then maybe one, three, a group, you know, so it has that feeling of like the birds, you know, like landing one.
Yes,
couple,
one at a time, all of a sudden the flock is there.
Exactly. And then eventually she meets her demise at the hands of the townspeople in this empty theater when the movie stops.
But
the screen is white.
But they wait for the movie to be over. Like,
and
I
the
love
way
that.
The screen is white and she's like getting like taken down by them. It really is, again,
screams the best.
It
scream,
is
in my
almost
opinion.
Insane that this movie was not picked up in an immediate 70s horror classic.
Yeah.
Because it just has that. And this scene especially. Just
and
has,
maybe
is
people,
that perfect, creepy, atmospheric 70s horror when that's what you want, this is that.
Maybe normies are afraid of atmospheric. I do think that at times. I think people, instead of trying to lean into it and get in the flow, they try to resist the stillness.
Yeah, there's that. And, you know, there's also just with the way the world works now, you have to be it's whatever the popular
aesthetic
2 year thing at the moment is. Right now we're in body horror, which I told someone the other day that I'm putting an end to that term and I don't want to hear it again. much yeah, like folk horror from a few years ago.
I didn't say you did. Those
I'm not talking to you.
I'm not talking to you. Thank you.
The person I said laughed and did agree with and absolutely agreed with what again, I absolutely agreed with what I said. I don't want to hear A24, the company again. Mm-hmm. I don't ever want. Yeah. I don't want to hear any of these things again. So
it's like how people ruin pirates and zombies. But again, and it goes in cycles.
Yeah. So when atmospheric horror, maybe it, again, don't hit me up. Maybe it's already happened. When like atmospheric horror, you know, like let that go by, and then you can appreciate it again. But like right now, I'm putting an end to the term body horror.
Okay,
officially,
well, I will not. I'm not going to bring it up. Well, I'm going to bring up. I mean, what are we going to bring up next? So that scene happens. And then we have the fever pitch of the film where we only have two people left. We have Arletty and Tom left. They're in the house. The dad has already come back.
Well, and Terry, you should say that what's a no scene that you went too far. Let's bring it back a little bit.
Bring it back.
Our people are here.
I was like winding. I was like, no, the listeners are here. Glass over, glass over.
The listeners are here.
I don't want to be a slow burn, you know.
The listeners are here. They're with us. Who knows what they're doing right now? They're driving. They're working on something. They're
like me. Wake up and you're getting dressed. Oh, that's great. That's great. You need to hear something, so you don't mind.
But our lady, as she's here, she's slowly, things are happening to her. Like her dad's talking about, and things like she's beginning to not feel pain. Her ears are starting to bleed.
She sticks her hand on a hot stove and doesn't feel it, and Tom's running her hand under cold water. And she was like, I didn't feel a thing. I didn't feel it. And then she's having those symptoms of where her body's rejecting her human blood. And then she sits on the side of the tub, which is such a great scene, and she's taking a giant hat pin, and she's sticking it into her thigh, and she feels nothing. It's great, which I love that they had put like probably like prosthetic skin or glue or something for her to like jam into her leg for that.
It is really incredible. Mm-hmm. And this is when we also start seeing the silhouettes in the window.
Mm-hmm. Because they have an amazing skylight in the home.
One, and then it goes away. Yeah. One, and then it goes away. But progressively, we're going to see more and more silhouettes in the window. We also are going to meet her dad. And this whole section, this little scene here is... things get manic and things get crazy. Mm-hmm. And this gets to the point where, you know, he's telling her, I tried to tell you to leave. I tried to keep you away.
I tried to warn you. I gave you all of the writings. I gave you all the warnings. When I dropped that body on the beach, why didn't you leave? And then he like clearly is just like barely holding onto his consciousness, and he's breaking. And then he attacks her, and then he backs off. And then she was like, no, we'll leave together. Dad, we'll leave together. And he's like, no, I've tasted human flesh. And so, you know, that's kind of when we get the full story of what happened. And we get the tale of the Dark Stranger. And the tale of the Dark Stranger is that they came out of the mountains after the Donner Party. And he had survived, but he had faith in a new master, a new religion. But then afterwards, he walked into the sea and said he'd return 100 years later to a world that was tired and disillusioned. And boy, did he ever. And when it first happened on the first night.
We came into our life the other day?
Yeah.
Oh.
Every generation has their period of tired and disillusioned.
I mean like me and yours life.
I mean, you know, that's the right time to watch this.
Came into our life on the other day, whatever day it was.
Yeah. So again, like the screenwriter element of like bringing it back to this era. And so again, he bringing the Donner Party, the cannibalism, the mysticism, the serving a new, you know, devilish master, and the how the town is now accursed comes into it. And so he's already tasted the flesh of humans. He was initiated. He can't leave, but she can. So then we have that wonderful cat and mouse of the, you know, I don't want to call them zombies, but just the townspeople who have been possessed by the blood moon.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, and Tom figures it out and he's running around the town. You know, the dad attacks her, covers his face in the blue paint and is rolling around in the paint.
It's such an amazing. Now, I remember that scene a lot because we couldn't tell it was blue paint necessarily, and you could just see his eyes and his teeth on that dark version, and it looks so, I mean, this one looks really scary as well, but I just remember being like, oh my God, it's like such a terrifying scene when the dad covers himself and he's rolling around in paint.
It's so great.
And then the crazy part is, oh, and so again, the wino gentleman had said that if you love your daddy, you're not going to bury him. You got to set him on fire. You got to burn the body or he'll just come back. So that's what she knows she has to do. So you see that, like, that hesitation where he's covered in fluids and he knocks over the turpentine and then she, you know, lights him on fire in his own home. And apparently it was the effects guy's first movie and that was the first time he'd ever done a fire effect. Dude, it's nuts.
It is an insane full 100%. Body. It rivals The Burning. It rivals, like, it is
crazy. No, and
then
you see a smoldering corpse later, and it's crazy that they left it there, and they just kind of come back, and there he is, like, laying
it
on the floor.
It is crazy.
Yeah, I agree.
Another very incredible scene is when, finally, in the skylight, multiple shadows are in the skylight, and then they start crashing through the windows. It just feels
truly... chase them out of the home.
It is just such... the mania builds. And again, that slow build to this point is so... it's so rewarding once you get to the section.
Yeah, and the townspeople start out slow and kind of sedentary, and then they get faster and faster as you're building in the film. And, Mike, I didn't tell you about one of the things that was taken from the script, allegedly, was that Tom was actually his dad that he alluded to earlier, who was from the States, was actually the dark. He was a relative of the dark stranger.
There you go.
And so Tom's return was coinciding with it because he was interested. And so apparently,
that's pretty cool.
I missed that part. And then there were scenes that were cut where he was describing his dark dreams that were going to be reflective of what the dark stranger would have known and then interacting with them in his own way. So those scenes were cut and you kind of like lost that thread. But I think it would have been an effective thread.
No, definitely.
Because he disappears in the end and we don't know, like, they swim out into the ocean to escape and Tom just kind of disappears.
He just disappears and she's put up.
But that's where the stranger is supposed to come from.
Basically a ceremonial wedding with the dark stranger.
Yes.
And then basically put into an asylum. And the idea is that they're going to leave her with a story that no one will ever believe. So it doesn't matter anyway. And that they're going to keep coming out from Point Dune into the rest of the world.
Yeah, as they make their way out. But also, it would make sense that Tom would then kind of marry her out there. And
no, it is truly really just an incredible movie. And like you're saying, there are scenes cut or ideas are cut because it really wasn't finished right away when they made this movie. Because they filmed it
71, okay. And it came out 74, 75.
But really came out, it showed at the drive-thrus.
Yes.
And that was really about it, as far as I know, until those weird bootleg DVD things, you know, movies that people didn't either care about the rights or know what the rights were.
Circuit City got them real cheap.
Exactly.
Like...
and it really wasn't until Code Red did the DVD and then the Blu-ray in the 2000s that this really started to get its due. And like I said, I'm glad it is getting its due. And I do hope more people can see it because I think it's one of the real standouts of... this type of horror, especially from the 70s.
And it really, like, it, you know, if we're like, we just ended abruptly, like, it fully just comes full circle and ends where it begins with Arletty
in the
asylum, in the hallway, having the same monologue that she had before, where she was pulled from the ocean, she doesn't know how, and then she was allowed to escape and ended up in the asylum.
Really, really incredible. And, you know, I know a lot of people have come to this. And again, if you haven't seen it, excited that you're going to see it for the first time. And I do think it's a base coat type movie where watching it once is a great thing because, like you said, the it's not the quickest movie in the world, but don't worry about that. I love that. But once you watch it a second time and you know where it's going, then you can settle in. And that's why I'm such a big proponent of watching movies twice. I like watching movies twice, like, in a week because... Yeah. Then once you know what happens, then you can settle in and start focusing on
and you get to
details.
Experience the suspense on the first watch. But I find that this, again, is such a strange combination of suspenseful horror thriller, but also it's beautiful.
Absolutely.
You know, and I love
the music, incredible.
But and I love that element, too, because it's, you know, giving nods to like the supernatural, because so frequently the supernatural is involved in a horror film, but treating it with more mystery, with more, not reverence, but in a way where you don't have everything before you. You don't understand what's happening, which feels truer to life, where you're just kind of bumbling around in confusion.
You're in the chaos vortex. Things happen. You have to deal with them as they come along, and you can, every day you wake up could be something great, something terrible, or both could happen in that one day, or a combination of all of these things.
All of them. Oh yeah,
from
and
the
also
minute
started,
you wake up to the minute you go to sleep.
What, like yesterday when I woke up and I went to get some cheese out of the refrigerator and the drawer just fell off.
This is
and
where
I was
we're
like,
at.
It's gonna be one of these days.
This
it's
is
gonna be one
where
of these days.
We're at, and hey, maybe this is where you're at. Maybe this talk is right where right what you need to hear in this moment. Because it's what we needed to talk about in this moment, and it's a movie we needed to watch in this moment.
And when you're in the chaos vortex, just remind yourself, like, all these insane things are happening. Just focus on the good ones, you know?
And deal with the bad ones.
And the bad ones are like the tax
deal
for all
the
good ones.
Because
you get the extremes,
but make sure you deal with the good ones. Don't ignore. You have to deal with the bad shit.
Yeah.
Don't ignore the bad shit. But don't let it
define you.
Well, like I said, next week's either going to be an interview or Through the Looking Glass. So we'll just see what happens. A lot of great stuff getting lined up. And we will, again, like I said, we'll, you know, we're still got a few weeks out, but we'll be in touch about what we'll be doing in October. We'll just see. Who knows? And like I said, be on the lookout for another podcast that hasn't done an episode for a while. Wink, wink. And get excited about Hospital Fest in New York, because we certainly are.
100%.
Cannot wait. All right. Thank you so much. Go watch Messiah of Evil. We'll talk to you next week.